This is the MagicWordPodcast.com.
Hello, this is Scott Wells for the MagicWordPodcast.com. Today, my guest is someone who many of you have perhaps seen in Las Vegas, or you've seen him on television. Certainly, you know the name, Lance Burton. It is a great privilege for me to have an opportunity to sit down with Lance and talk about his career and just kind of some fun things that he has done. I should say just very interesting stories and things that have gone on in his life and leading him to where he is then today. As those of you know, of course, that he had his own show in Las Vegas for a long time, but leading up to that time, he in 1982 had won the FISM Award. And prior to that, in 1980, he won the gold medal for the stage contest for the International Brotherhood of Magicians Convention in Evansville, Indiana. That was the first time that I had seen him. For that matter, probably most of the magic community became well aware of who he was and continues to perform. And at that time, it was interesting. It was shortly after his 20th birthday that he had actually performed and won that gold medal, the first one awarded to a magician in the contest for the IBM. And there have been very few since then, as a matter of fact. He went on, as I said, to win at FISM and has won several other awards and been given other kinds of things such as a master's fellowship by the Academy of Magical Arts. He has had his own theater, the Lance Burton Theater, at the Monte Carlo in Las Vegas. Leading up to that, he had other places where he worked, and that was kind of the culmination of that. And as I recall, I believe he was the first picture, I should say the cover boy for the first issue of Magic Magazine. And so it was phenomenal. What a career that this gentleman has had. But he has hung up his wand and decided to write, direct, produce, and star in a full feature-length independent movie called Billy Toppet, Master Magician. And it occurred to me after we had talked about where that name may have come from, because Lance's full name actually is William Lance Burton. Could it be that since it was about him, that he may have been known as Billy? And of course, we know what a Toppet is, thanks to Pat Page and to Michael Lamar. Well, Lance talks about these and many other things in this conversation that we have. And by the way, that we were trying to record this not only for the podcast over the microphone here, but we also had my iPad that was open on Facebook. So this way we had a lot of people tuning in who were asking questions in real time. My battery died on my iPad, so he switched on his iPhone and opened his Facebook page, and we continued our discussion. And because it was through his page, and he has a lot more followers than the Magic Word Podcast does, that we just had dozens of people who were asking questions, and you can sense the childlike fun that is in his voice, so that you can tell that this was just a great podcast and a lot of fun to record, and fun being there, and you can kind of sense that as well. So anyhow, I am going to now introduce to you officially, someone that, again, that you have seen and you know, but now you can get to know him a little bit better about what he's doing in his second act. Please welcome Lance Burton here on The Magic Word. Hello, this is Scott Wells for TheMagicWordPodcast.com, and I have with me as my guest now someone who is a FISM winner, which, you know, there have been a lot of FISM winners, obviously, over the years, but not many U.S. winners. I believe this was the first winner from the United States of FISM doing a stage act, and is also was featured then on the Johnny Carson show, and then later had his own show at the...
This guy is so old. He's done so many things. We can't remember how much he's done. He's so old.
It wasn't the Tropicana. Where was that you were before?
The Hacienda.
The Hacienda, that's what I was thinking. Before that, you had your own show with the Lance Burton Theater, then in the Monte Carlo, and the man who used to, magician who used to be known as Lance Burton, and now the producer and director. Here he is, Mr. Lance Burton. Hey,
well,
there, Lance.
Scott's good to be here. Thank you.
And you as well, sir.
And we are in San Antonio, Texas. We are here at the International Brotherhood of Magicians annual convention.
Right.
And we just finished our, just before the convention started, we had the Lance Burton Teen Seminar.
How'd that go, by the way?
And it was great. We had a bunch of kids, young magicians, and they were really enthusiastic about magic. And mm-hmm. we had, of course, Eugene Berger and Jeff McBride running the classes. And our guest teacher this year was Michael Amar. And so, and I was there, and the kids got to learn magic and talk to pros, and it just reminds me of myself when I was their age, because they're so enthusiastic.
And you've been involved with the youth for so long. I mean, back when they had the Las Vegas Desert Seminar, I guess you kind of got involved.
Yeah, it started out in the '80s. It started out with Joe Stevens, maybe 25 years ago.
Yeah.
With the Desert Seminar, Joe came to me and said, you know, we're having some younger magicians show up at the seminar, and we don't really have any events for them.
Right.
Because it's Vegas. And it's
for 21 and older.
Exactly. So he said, would you host a lunch for the young magicians? And we did that for many years. And we had a lunch, and I would invite Johnny Thompson and Matt King and Fielding West and, you know, any of the professionals there working in town.
Siegfried and Roy.
Yeah, and we'd all have lunch with the kids, and it was great.
How nice was that?
And then at some point, about 15 or 20 years ago, they decided they wanted to make it a whole weekend just for the teens, preceding the actual seminar. And they envisioned having classes and lectures, and I said to them, you know, this is a really ambitious project, and we'll do it if you can get Jeff McBride and Eugene Berger to come and run the actual classrooms.
Mm-hmm. Because they know how to run that class. Sure.
And I've been a guest at their master classes, and so they've been actually running the
classes. Now, the master classes, how does that differ from like a workshop? Is that something where you actually give it a piece of rope or whatever, and you can say, okay, we're going to do this over and over and over?
Jeff and Eugene have many different types of master classes. They have, sometimes they focus on close-up magic or stage magic.
And mentalism.
Magic for doctors and medical professionals.
Oh, really? So the special professions.
They have all kinds
even.
Of specialty, and they have general sort of master classes. But the students come in from all over the world. I've met students from America and China and Japan and Europe and South America. And the students bring their act and the material that they're working on. And they perform.
Yeah.
And then they get
critique
input from Jeff and Eugene and the other students, and it's really
invaluable.
It's really a great way to learn.
Have you seen some of the guys grow up? I mean, we were talking to Joel. Go ahead.
Yeah, we were walking up here. We ran into
Joel Ward,
who was one of the teen magicians on a television special I produced, 20 years ago.
I was going to say, in the late, like, 89, 90, early 90s, was it, maybe?
Late 90s.
Late 90s, was it? Okay. I guess time flies, yeah.
Lance Burton's Young Magician Showcase, and we had 15 young magicians, and it was a television special, and he was like 15 or 16.
Was that the one where you had that young man who had cancer? What was his name?
No, that was
because he came and actually performed on your show at Monte Carlo on stage.
Yeah, he's been in our Young Magicians program.
Yeah,
Chad.
That's it.
Yeah, Chad Juros, very talented young magician. Mm-hmm. When he was a kid, he performed as Chattakazam. Yeah, but he was cute because he was like 7 or 8 years old.
Yeah.
And as he got older, he dropped the Chattakazam. But he's doing really great. Yeah. His cancer's in full remission, and fingers crossed.
Did you go by something when you were younger too, like
the amazing
Lance, or something like that? I was Great Scott for a while.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
No, I was just always Lance or Lance Burton.
Yeah.
Lance the Magician.
Okay.
When I was a kid, yeah, that was
differentiate.
I actually had a business card that said Lance the Magician.
Back in Louisville. Yep, way back when.
Exactly.
Okay, well, also, so that you had been, as everybody knows then, the history and everything of what you've been doing and where you have gone, but after that you left Monte Carlo, then as far as the magic community, that you have not been quite as involved. I mean, first of all, you got one of the most iconic photos on Magic Magazine. I know that we're going to be having a 25th anniversary coming up here in Vegas in August.
Yeah.
And that I know your photo is, or that cover is one of them, with your hands over your face saying $100 million man.
Yeah, I was the first. When we opened my show at the Hacienda Hotel, that was just when Magic Magazine was starting.
Yeah.
I was the first cover.
First cover, that's right.
Of the magazine.
Yeah.
And Stan, as you know, it's the best magazine out there for magic. So I'm very excited about Magic Live next month.
I, been writing for him or associated with it for since the 80s myself.
And he always does a great job at the conventions.
Oh, my gosh, yeah.
Puts on the best convention.
So that you had done that, and so then again kind of transitioned over into producing and directing, and Billy Toppett's a...
I retired from the stage in 2010, mm-hmm. so, but I've still been involved in magic,
sure.
And, you know, our Young Magicians program, which we moved to the IBM convention.
And so we go from place to place, like last year in Jacksonville, and
that's
Phoenix
right.
before, and wherever, yeah.
Right,
mm-hmm.
and Phoenix mm-hmm. and St. Louis,
right.
and so
mm-hmm.
this is our fourth year
okay.
with the IBM, and so I've been doing that, and I've been doing, of course, you know, I do charity work there in Las Vegas.
You're involved, like, with the pets, aren't you?
Animal
rescue, right.
Yeah, animal.
And Joey Spina probably is very involved.
Yes,
with, yes.
Joni. Mm-hmm. I did some things with Joni with Heaven Can Wait Animal Society.
Mm-hmm.
And we have a terrific animal shelter in Las Vegas called the Nevada SPCA, No mm-hmm. Kill Animal Shelter. And I do fundraising events with them. In fact, next month we're having our third or fourth annual bowling tournament.
Oh, that's fun.
So it's great. Everybody gets together and we bowl and we raise money for the animals. So it's a great shelter because it's a no-kill shelter.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of the animals are animals that are hard to replace, that if they went into a normal shelter, they would wind up being euthanized.
Mm-hmm.
Animals with medical needs, or sometimes they come in with pairs. You know, if you have two dogs and they're both 9-10 years old and they've lived together all their life, you can't split
separate.
Them up.
Yeah, it's like
because they're family,
they're sibling. Yeah,
you have to keep them together.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, about a year ago, I was there at the shelter the day the three dogs got adopted. That they were nicknamed the three blind mice.
Oh, funny.
They were three dogs. They were very large dogs. They mm-hmm. were like 90 to 100 pounds each.
Wow. That's a commitment for someone to take on all three.
And all three were blind.
My. So.
And it was a birth defect. It was a mother and a daughter and a son. And they were all, they stood next to each other touching. You know, that's
sure.
how they maneuvered. They were great dogs because
mm-hmm.
you could take them out in the courtyard and throw the tennis ball and they would fetch.
Mm-hmm.
They would hear the ball bounce and go and get the tennis ball and bring it back to you. But they were there at the shelter for almost a year. And then finally the couple came in and adopted them. And I was there that day and I met the couple.
Special
and
people.
The man had experience before with, he had had a dog that was
mm-hmm.
blind.
I remember Joni telling me about stray cats. I hadn't thought about that, but they
yeah.
said that's a real feral cat. So apparently there's a problem because people come to Vegas, they have a cat, then they move and they leave
right.
their animals behind.
Now, my good friend Gary Darwin, who runs the Darwin Magic Club there in Las Vegas, if you come to Las Vegas,
Wednesday night, midnight,
come over to, they moved it over to Tommy Rocker's over on Industrial Boulevard. They're still meeting there every Wednesday.
Well, is he doing okay, by the way?
What's that?
Is
Gary's
doing
good.
Okay,
yes,
good.
I talked to him yesterday.
Excellent.
He's doing good. But Gary, he has these cats that he feeds at his
mm-hmm.
house,
mm-hmm.
And they're, you know, it's a feral cat colony, a lot of them, and some of them are his neighbors' cats that come over for a free meal. But Gary feeds them.
Yeah.
So he had, but they kept having babies on his back porch.
Okay,
and they kept multiplying.
Kittens, yeah.
So finally, and I adopted several of them. And I adopted all that I could. And it started to get crazy.
Yeah.
So I called the Heaven Can't Wait Animal Society, which I met through Joni Spina. And they had a program called Catch, Neuter, and Release.
Mm-hmm.
And they came over, and they were great. They came over, they talked to all Gary's neighbors and let them know what they were doing to, you know, keep their cats inside for a few days. And they set live traps on Gary's back porch. And over the course of a week, they captured 20 cats. Now, about half the cats had already been spayed and neutered, but a half of them weren't. So all the cats had surgeries. They brought all the cats back, let them go, and now they're still there. They live there in the neighborhood, and Gary feeds them, but they're not having babies every 6 months.
That's a big difference then. So going then back over to the movies that you had written this yourself, I guess, a long time ago. Is that right?
Yeah, here's what happened. Here's the story of how Billy Toppett, Master Magician, came about. When I was a kid, I saw The Magician starring Bill Bixby.
Sure, of course.
Remember
we all
that?
Sure.
Like 1973.
Right.
And Bill Bixby played this professional magician.
Living above the magic castle.
Lived above the magic castle.
Drove a cool car, had his own plane.
Had the vet.
Yeah.
Had the driving gloves, had the phone in the car.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway, this was the greatest TV show ever. Bill Bixby, the magician. And Mark Wilson was the magic advisor on the show. Now we fast forward about, I don't know, 15, 20 years later, I'm in Las Vegas, and I get cast on an episode of Knight Rider.
Knight Rider, sure, I remember that episode.
I played Austin Templeton, the magician slash assassin. So on the set also was Mark Wilson. He provided all of the illusions for that episode. And so that's where Mark and I got to know each other and got to hang out and really became friends, was on the set of Knight Rider.
Right.
Working for I think we shot the episode in 7 days. So as we were shooting, one day after work, we were going out to dinner. So we were in Mark's car. We were driving to a restaurant. And Mark says to me, "Lance, how do you like doing this work?" And I said, "Oh, doing this TV show, Mark? Oh, this is great. This is my dream job. I get to do magic. I get to act. I get to work with the stunt guys. I'm having the time of my life." So Mark says to me, "Well, you're doing a good job, and you should think about doing more of this." And I said, "What are you talking about?" He said, "Try to think of an idea to come up with, like The Magician, to do a series where it's a magician who's using his magic skills to solve mysteries."
Mysteries,
or,
right.
Or whatever.
Well, Black's Magic, remember?
Yeah,
with Hal Linden?
That was later on.
Yeah.
So he planted the seed in my mind. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, 25, 30 years later, Billy Toppit, Master Magician, popped out. So that's how it came about.
But just a one episode. I mean, that's a commitment when they're going to have like 13 different episodes and different ideas and everything.
Yeah. So, but no, we wrote it as a feature film.
Yeah.
I called up my friend Michael Goudeau one day and I said, you know, he was my guest star in my show in Las Vegas. And I said, "Michael, what are you doing after work?" And he said, "Nothing." I said, "Okay, come over to my house. You and I are going to write a feature film." And he said, "Okay." Mm-hmm. And it was that simple. And then we sat down and that first night and came up with the characters and the plot and the outline.
Yeah.
And then we just...
Did it just kind of come to you, or you just kind of bounce off ideas? We did this.
Yeah, we had a pizza, and we just sat there in my living room eating pizza and throwing ideas and writing down ideas.
Sure.
And it took us about an hour, 2 hours, and we had
the general plot,
the
outline.
The general plot.
And then you can kind of sleep on it and then kind of let it percolate.
And then
we
started writing and we wrote the script.
And how long did it take actually to write that?
Didn't take that long. Maybe a month to write the script.
Once you got the idea and you know where you're going with it.
Yeah.
And then, you know, I kind of felt like with the movie, in my opinion, Now You See It. I haven't seen Now You See It 2, but Now You See It, the first movie, didn't do so much for me because I felt like whoever wrote that, they just kind of went off in a direction. Then they said, "We don't know what to do. Why don't you guys go out and do a car chase scene for a little bit?" And it just seemed disjointed. Then they came back and said, "Okay, we need to wrap this up and come back in and we'll do that." It was okay and obviously made a lot of money, enough to do a second one. In my opinion, I thought that Burt Wonderstone, you know, which you were in, was...
No,
weren't you
wasn't.
In that
no,
one?
No.
Okay.
I was not involved in any way.
Okay, well, I thought that was a funny movie.
No,
I enjoyed that.
I wasn't involved in any way.
That wasn't one of your favorite movies.
Well, listen, there have been many, 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 many movies over the years that involved magicians, characters on the screen. And some of them I thought did a good job and some of them not so good. But that's why we wanted to do Billy Toppit. That's why I wanted to do it, because I've never seen a movie that was sort of true to the magic.
Okay.
That used, you know, magic that we're used to saying.
Yes.
Seeing magic, stage magic, close-up magic, parlor magic, magic techniques. In the film,
like a Harry Potter kind of.
I'm always now. I admit, because I've been a professional magician all my life, I may be too close to the subject, and that's fine. But I admit that. But I always am disappointed when I see a movie and they go to the
take the easy way out
CGI to make the magic, and I'm always confused. I'm always like, if you're going to do a movie about a magician, then why don't you do magic? Mm-hmm. Why don't you have the lead character do the magic? So that was our goal.
So that's the idea with Billy Toppit.
That was our goal.
Billy Toppit, so you did the real magic.
That was the idea with Billy Toppit.
Do you have any cutaways or any problems?
I wanted to. Before I die, I don't care if anybody else sees it or not. My goal was, before I die, I want to sit down and see a movie where there's a magician. And he's not the bad guy.
Yeah, that's right. Not the villainous character.
And he's not ridiculous.
Yeah.
And he really does magic.
Mm-hmm.
And he saves the day. And the magic's real.
Yeah.
And that was all I wanted before I die, I just want to see that on screen.
Even if it's your own movie.
Exactly. And if no one else is going to do it, then so that was my goal.
Okay. Well, obviously, you're happy with or satisfied with the outcome?
Very happy.
Yep. And the distribution, tell me about how that's coming.
The distribution is coming along very, very good. It's a long process.
Yeah.
Independent film production is exactly what it sounds like. There's no studio behind it.
You have to shop it and go to the festivals and all
it's
that.
It's just two crazy guys that sat down and wrote a script and decided we're going to shoot this and we're going to cast all of our friends so we don't have to pay them.
Yeah, yeah.
But the good part is all of my friends that are in the movie, they're all magicians that you all know.
Yeah.
We have Johnny Thompson with a major role. He's one of the chief bad guys. Rory Johnson plays his son, who is hilarious, by the way. Rory is without a great bad guy, you don't have a hero.
Yeah, you have to put the hero up in the tree. Yeah.
Rory is a great bad guy. He is such a fine actor and brought so much to the table.
Mm-hmm.
But we have professional jugglers, professional magicians.
You got Fielding West.
Fielding plays the mayor. Louis Anderson.
Louis Anderson, yeah, that's funny.
Stand-up comic, plays a security guard. Chris Angel pops up in the movie. Robin Leach pops up in the movie. Matt King pops up in the movie.
Mac who?
So everybody you can think of makes cameos. So all the magicians will get a kick out of it.
Well, people are going to be asking now, where can they see that? Right now, the trailer is available on YouTube.
Right,
I guess,
now, right now, you're not able to see it, but that's what I'm working on.
Yeah.
Last month, we made our festival premiere
at
the Wild Rose Film Festival in Des Moines, Iowa.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a week-long festival, and they show 60 to 70 different films. We were the closing night film, and we won 6 awards, including the award for best family film of the entire festival. And I know most of you didn't get to go to the film festival, but I documented the entire trip with my iPhone.
Yep.
And when I got home, I took a lot of photos and videos. And when I got home, I put together a little travel video, and it's about 8 minutes long, but it shows my whole trip. And the festival and the awards presentation. And you can find that on my YouTube channel. Just search Lance Burton. I have a whole channel now, and it's called My First Film Festival. Or you can just
I'm going to put it
and
actually.
And it's on Facebook also. It's on my Facebook
page.
Yeah,
that's, I think, where I saw it. I watched the whole thing, too, so I know exactly what you're talking about. Because some of their, that, again, was a thing which was for charity, because I know you were talking about animal rescue there as well.
Right, and they have a great no-kill shelter there in Des Moines, called the Animal Rescue League of Iowa. And I went and took a tour of their shelter, which is on the video. And we had on the red carpet, we had dogs for adoption to walk the red carpet. and it's all in the video.
Well, I'm going to put that video link also whenever this is posted on the blog, so this way they can listen to it and they can also tap on that to watch this then as well. I want to go over here to see what kind of questions.
We got questions from the audience.
That, now we've got some people. Let's see. What have we said over here? Boy. Why don't you go back over and you can scroll through there and take a look.
Let's see.
And
we've got some questions.
I'm getting my glasses.
Hi, Lance. You ever done a show in Quebec, Canada? I have not been to Quebec. Many years ago, I did some shows for the firefighters in Edmonton and Calgary. Chuck Jones was doing those
Chuck
shows.
Chuck and Jan.
Then and now it's run by. Murray Hatfield, I think.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, those were fun shows. 40 below zero, though. It was very cold.
Welcome to Canada.
When we left the theater, I had to take blankets and wrap around my carrier with all the doves in it.
Oh.
I didn't want the doves to freeze when I was trying to get into the car to get back to the hotel. And there's Kathy says, hi, Lance. Hi to you, too. And, here we are. Kathy says, still look great. Oh, thank you. Flattery will get you.
Who should talk to, you or me?
I don't know. It might be. And wish I had the opportunity to meet you in person. Lance, you should have come to the IBM convention.
Yes.
Yeah, we're having a great time here. Do you travel much to other parts of the country? No, I don't travel much these days. I stay home, and I have 2 dogs and 7 cats. And I have a dog who is, Rio, is 14 years old.
Mm-hmm. And how about your doves? How old are they?
And the doves are very old. They're over 20
years old. Yeah.
I still have the doves. But Rio is on, he's got arthritis, so he has to have pain pills. And I take care of him.
Had to watch him.
Yeah. Stage magic. Why do you think some do not do it anymore? Well, you know, this is a good point.
That's a very good question.
A good question. The close-up magic and the sort of, you know, quote-unquote street magic.
And the cardistry we were just talking about earlier.
Yeah, has the young people have sort of moved their interest into those. So mm-hmm. I think we're not seeing as many young stage magicians come along as we have in the past. But magic goes in cycles. So
true.
Right now, close-up magic's really, really hot.
Pendulum might swing back here.
Sure. Yeah. So I think that's
what
always,
I think is also then. Lance,
have you ever met Betty White? I think I did meet Betty White once.
I did. She was in my show. I was working at the Castle of the Parlor once many years ago.
We had the same agent for many years.
Oh, no way. Really?
Yeah. And he's a great guy. And I think I did meet Betty White once, and I think it was at one of the Academy of Magical Arts awards mm-hmm. Awards ceremonies. Let's see. Matt King, School of Magic. Yes, Matt King is one of my best friends. I met Matt King when I was 14 years old. Mm-hmm. We were both at the Louisville Magic Club, watching in Chicago. Hello, Chicago. Yes, I am attached to the beard. Someone wants to know. Yes, I didn't grow the beard right away once I retired, but once we finished, because we were still filming the movie, so I had to match shot. Once we finished filming, though, and I just...
You let it grow.
It's not that I grew a beard, I just stopped shaving.
Like in Frozen, let it grow, let it grow. No, that's not it.
And looking good, Lance. Been 10 years since I saw you when I got married in Vegas. Still married. Good for you.
Who's that?
Erwin Royce. Good for you. Royce. Still married.
Yeah. Well, you know, going back over there to the fact that there are not a lot of people who are doing stage magic, you know, my thought is that it's gotten to be expensive. You know, illusions are expensive, particularly for young people entering into magic, that, you know, we would have little boxes or stratospheres or, you know, whatever types of little parlor tricks and try to make a stage show out of it. But to go and buy an illusion and to pay the maker of that, let's say, like, for someone who wants to buy one of Walter Blaney's ladder levitations or something,
yeah, illusions,
kids not going to get into that.
Illusions is a whole different thing, but, you know, there's a whole category of stage magic. I started out as a stage magician, but, you know, I was doing card manipulations and candles. And
is that what you did first?
Doing
more manipulation?
Yeah,
and that's difficult
to
do.
That was my original act. And that was just because that was the kind of magic I liked to see when I was a kid. Mm-hmm. First magician I ever saw was Harry Collins.
Oh, sure. The Frito-Lay magician.
Frito-Lay magician. My mother worked at the Frito-Lay plant.
Oh, that was how it happened.
In Louisville, mm-hmm. making potato chips.
Okay.
And it was the Frito-Lay employees' Christmas party.
Okay.
And I was 5 years old, and Harry was doing a show for the employees. And I was the kid that went up on stage to do the Miser's Dream.
Uh-huh.
And that was my first experience with magic. But Harry did doves.
Mm-hmm.
And so my first experience was Harry. He did doves, and he looked like a magician. And he Miser's Dream, he was a terrific sleight-of-hand magician. And that was the image I had in my mind. That's what a magician's supposed to be.
He is the magician's magician.
And then as I got older, I started seeing other magicians. You know, I saw, you know, of course, Johnny Thompson on mm-hmm. television, Shimada, Norm Nielsen.
Did you feel like you were cloning those people?
I felt like I would see those guys on the Merv Griffin show, on the Tonight Show. And I would go, wow, now that's a real magician. That's what I want to do. Mm-hmm. So that I was always drawn to that type of magic.
The reason I mention that is because that the people have talked about Lance Burton clones, you know, during a time whenever that because whoever's popular wins, or now it's Chris Angel or whatever. Or
yeah,
David
whoever's
Blaine.
Popular, who are they see on TV? That's
right.
Kids, and that's natural. I mean, we
sure
all
is.
When we're
sure.
kids, you see somebody on TV and doing a type of act,
and they're successful, and that's what I want to be like you, just like you were saying that you emulated your style after them.
Exactly.
But you developed your own style then.
Yeah, eventually you've developed your own style.
Well, and that's what I was going to get at as far as when you're saying the act, that I had Mike Robinson, who is a tremendous ventriloquist, and he was talking about when people come to him and say, I want to buy a puppet for my child because he's interested in ventriloquism. He said, well, does he like to write scripts? Is he good, you know, at throwing his voice? Well, no, he wants to get this. Well, then he wants to buy a doll. You know, I mean, that's not the same thing. In other words, he says that the throwing your voice and learning the ventriloquism is the skill, the puppet or the dummy is the act. So in other words, you were learning back palming and all kinds of manipulation skills and all this kind of stuff because those were your skills. And then you said, okay, I could do this, I could do this. And then you have an act. I mean, there's something that will trigger it saying, oh, I see this lamppost, or I can do this with, you know, the doves would be nice up there. It's kind of outdoors, or it makes sense. I mean, and then it becomes more organic and you put together an act. And that's what I liked about your act. I like about Copperfield's act on television when he's got one thing that kind of leads to the next, as opposed to Doug Henning, whom I loved also, but it was one unrelated effect after another one. But I think I can put together.
Sure, you want to frame an act, a stage act. You want to frame it in a theatrical setting. My act was sort of, you know, I had the street. It was originally a street sign, mm-hmm. and it became a street lamp
right.
with a little newspaper box. And that was so I didn't have to have an assistant to bring props on and off. So
right.
the birds would just fly up to the lamp. And I could.
Oh, that was your idea. It's just you're
yeah,
cheap.
It was. Yeah, I didn't want to pay an assistant. So that was. But that also made it, you know, kind of into a street scene. And then
right.
that later on, that allowed me to have a backdrop with, you know, a painted backdrop with a London.
Yes.
London backdrop.
Was that what that was supposed to be? I thought I was thinking it was New York. So it was London.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it was.
It's
was
a silhouette of a.
I started out with a street sign.
Right.
Was
what were the two
was
streets?
Like a new 52nd Broadway, okay. I think. Was what we had painted on the sign.
That would be an interesting trivia question.
Now, you know that was a real street sign.
Oh?
Yeah. I was in high school. My friend.
So there's one missing.
Yeah. My friend Mickey Mudd and I were driving one day when we were in high school.
Yeah.
And we were in his neighborhood and someone had backed into or hit the street sign.
Knocked it over.
And had knocked the sign off.
Yeah.
And the sign was just laying in the grass. And so we drove by, and I just stopped the car. He got out and grabbed it and put it in my trunk.
And you kept it for all those years.
And then later on, I thought of the idea for the street sign, so I just painted it over. I covered it and had a friend of mine paint on it.
Yeah.
And then Matt King's mom, Betty, gave me a hat rack that she had.
Okay.
And my dad attached it to the top of the hat rack.
Mm-hmm.
And then I bought a little basket at some store and attached it to the front, and that was what I did my act with, and so that was a street sign that Mickey Mudd and I stole, and a hat rack, and my dad attached it, and that's what I used on my first Tonight Show. With
I was about
Carson.
To ask you that was it, and that's what you used also when you won FISM. You'd taken that over then.
No, I had Bill Smith had built me a fancy street lamp.
Well, why didn't you use that on Johnny? He wasn't good enough for that.
Yeah. No, that was afterwards. That was after Johnny.
I thought you won first, then were on the Carson Show.
No.
It was vice versa.
I won the gold medal competition.
That was what it was. I remember in Louisville, Kentucky.
In Evansville, Indiana,
pardon me. Yep.
The gold medal competition, and then went out and did his magic, and then Johnny Carson, and then came to Vegas. Did 2 months at the Tropicana, then went to FISM, then came back to Vegas.
I'm glad you mentioned that because I remember so well there at Evansville, and you were the first person to win the gold medal, and that I was not as involved with the IBM as I am now, and it was one of my early conventions, and someone was telling me about during rehearsal about how that you had spent so much time throwing your doves to the spotlight to make sure they were going to come back.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Someone was telling me, you know, that is really the mark of a real professional, somebody who's not just going to walk in and try it and it works fine once, but I mean, you kept trying.
Well, we took a few minutes just to test the lights out with the birds because I was still learning the act at the time, and frankly, I hadn't had an opportunity to work the act in a real theater with real lighting. So
and it was
I was
a huge theater
I
for
was,
you at the time.
I was
sure.
nervous how the birds would react under those conditions.
They worked beautiful. I remember the act well.
And it worked good. And by the way, the gold medal competition, we were just at the gold medal competition.
We were at the stage competition.
Stage
tomorrow
competition.
Night's a gold competition.
Oh, yeah, but these were gold medals.
They were
the preliminaries.
Okay.
This is the preliminary.
For the gold medal.
Yeah,
yes.
So we were just watching. So it's still going on, and it's very creative acts.
You've really never acted as a judge, per se.
No,
and
never be a judge. Never be a judge. It's a thankless task. If you're a judge, you make one friend for life, and you make 50 enemies for life.
Who are always saying, well, that guy, speaking out of the, over your shoulder, behind your back.
I would never be, I have compassion and for the judges because it's a tough job.
What do you think about judging in general? I mean, for art, because that magic is a creative art like ballet or whatever.
Here's what I think. If there was one thing first of all, you can have the Audience Choice Award, so nobody can argue with that, because that's democratic. Everyone in the audience gets a vote. the People's Choice Award. That's always a nice way to give one of the prizes out. Mm-hmm. But if you're going to have a jury and a panel of judges, I very strongly recommend in the future for any organizations having a contest, have as many judges as you can, have up to 8 or 10 judges, and institute a policy where you throw out the high score and the low score mm-hmm. for each contestant, mm-hmm. like they do at the Olympics. Mm-hmm. So, for instance, you have a magician that comes in from whatever country, from England, let's say, and he does his act, and you have 10 judges, and one of the judges scores him really high, or one of the judges scores him really low. You know, one judge can affect the outcome. But if you do like at the Olympics, if you just automatically say, okay, who gave the highest score? Okay, this guy, we're going to throw his out. Who gave the lowest score for the guy from England? We're going to throw his out.
You know, funny story.
I think there's never going to be a way that's completely fair, but I think that helps make it more fair.
I was in judging a magic competition once, and we had used that for the IBM one time. And I remember that Kevin James and Rudy Kobe were judges along with me. And the funny thing, almost every one of theirs was thrown out because that Rudy was like, oh, this guy's a 10. This is really great, you know. And Kevin's like, he's a 1 maybe or a 2. And it's like, and they were both being, you know, as critical as they could, but, you know, they had a different level of where they started, you know, to begin with, basically. And Rudy's just, you know, outgoing and just saying, oh, this guy's great, you know. And Kevin saying, you can use a little more work. You know, it was kind of funny. So we kind of ended up in the middle of the road then like that. But it's just, I think, hard to judge art. And I'm talking about when, you know, any kind of art competition, when you're painting sculptures, you know, whatever it is, or if you're at the state fair judging cattle.
It's subjective.
It's very subjective.
It's always subjective.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And so that's why I think you need to have the best judges possible who have a good base of comparison. It's not their first rodeo.
Right. You know, basically. Have as many judges as you can. Have the most experienced judges as you can. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you do the best you can. But you're right. It's never going to be. Art is not conducive to being judged in that way. It's not like a sporting event.
It's not. No, exactly. And so it really changes the dynamic. I think if you have different people who have different backgrounds, and so this way they know what they're going to be looking for.
Lance, experts or lay folks? Experts see one way. Yes, that's a good point. That's a good point. Magic, he brings up in judging contests, do you listen to the experts or do you listen to the lay people?
Well, that's why we have the People's Choice Award
sometimes,
too. That's
right, People's Choice, and it's always good. When I was in the gold medal competition, they also had a couple of judges that were laymen in terms of magic, but were maybe theater people.
Yeah.
Or people involved in you know, art or music or whatever, mm-hmm. but their background wasn't in magic. I think that's a good point, too, because in the end, as magicians, we're hoping to make a product that's commercial. We're hoping to get hired to work on a cruise ship or a restaurant or a casino or whatever. So, absolutely. Yeah, if I have to choose between pleasing the judges or pleasing the people, I always go with the people.
That's where the money is.
That's where the money's at. That's where you're going to make your living.
And, that's right.
And that's your job, is to entertain. Your job isn't to entertain the magicians and the magic judges. Your job is to entertain the people.
The paying public,
And Melissa says, Lance looks great with a goatee. Thank you, Melissa.
They didn't see the rest on the side there.
Thank you.
You got a little bit there, too. Yeah.
What about Scott? He's got a nice
goatee. Got the
whole
thing going over there,
too.
That's right. Were there some others up above there? Let's see what other kind of questions.
Let's see.
Oops, sorry.
Oh, wait a minute. No, we've
close that. Yes,
hit the wrong button.
Yeah, scroll down.
Lance, you rock. Thank you. Are you staying in retirement? Yes, I am. I love retirement. Let's see if there's some more questions we've missed. Hey, there's cousins in Kentucky. Hey, Rilda, how are you?
It's funny.
I got cousins on here. Nice. I'm coming back to Kentucky eventually. I'm planning on when I in a
eventually going to go back to retire home.
I'm moving back to the farm. And
how big was your farm?
The family farm was my grandfather's farm. It's about 100 acres.
Was it cattle or was it a ranch?
They had on the farm, when my grandfather was alive, there were cows that he had to milk every day and pigs mm-hmm. and chickens. And as kids, we had to go out to the chicken coop and collect eggs and grew crops, grew all corn and all kinds of crops. So, but it's just very peaceful on the farm, and I love being back there, and that's where I intend to wind up here shortly.
Any other questions there?
Now that we've got the movie done.
Yeah. Now the movie's done. You don't have another one in mind. I mean, you're
no,
finished
no,
with that.
No, I did the movie.
So you've done that. Just one on
yes,
your bucket
I won,
list.
I won some awards.
What else on your bucket list?
Award-winning filmmaker. Okay, I'm quitting while I'm ahead.
That's right.
That's it. Only thing left is to write the book, and mm-hmm. I can do that at the farm just as easily as Las Vegas.
And is your book going to be kind of like what? Well, Johnny Thompson has a lot of tricks. I mean, he was talking yeah. last evening about yeah. having a.
I'll put everything in the book, everything possible I can mm-hmm. think of.
Speaking of that, tell me about a story. You know, people love to hear some stories.
Have you got? Sure. What story you want to hear?
Well, I was going to say, like, behind the scenes or something. You know, there have been a lot of celebrities come through Vegas and that you meet. And is there anything that's been, there was like a childhood hero? It was kind of cool to meet a guy.
Oh, yeah. We had so many wonderful nights, people to come through and, let's see. We'd only been open at the Monte Carlo Hotel for about a year or so, and Bruce Willis came to the show mm-hmm. and brought his three daughters.
Yeah,
and that was a cool night because number one, I'm a big Bruce Willis fan.
Aren't
we all? Love his movies, and it was great to see him. You know, you think of Bruce Willis, you think Mr. Macho
Action hero.
You know, yippee-yi-yay, yeah. You know, and all these action movies, and he's a tough guy, but to see him with his three daughters, they were very small then, and they brought him backstage, and to see him, you know, he was so cool, and they came backstage, and I met them, but he was. It was fun to see him as a father because mm-hmm. he was like, no, dear, no, don't touch that. Now, Mr. Burton has to do another show. Now, it was just yeah. so neat to see that.
Yeah, different side of it.
So that was fun. And we got a picture and everything, which hung for years out in the hallway outside of my dressing room. I had a whole wall of fame of actors and celebrities and magicians that
yep.
had come to the show.
Like Ali, Muhammad Ali, I saw.
Oh, Muhammad Ali came to the show. I met Muhammad Ali three times in my life. Mm-hmm. And the last time I saw him, it was about maybe a year before we closed the show. His daughter, Rashida, came to the show. And I met her, mm-hmm. and she said, you know what, I'm coming back, and I'm going to bring my dad with me. And about two or three weeks later, she came back with the champ. And I introduced him in the audience. And at that point, the Parkinson had developed pretty far. He could barely stand.
Yeah.
So I introduced him in the audience. I gave him this big introduction, and he stood up. And his daughter was on one side of him, and his wife was on the other, and they were helping him. They were helping to steady him. But he stood up and waved, and the crowd went crazy.
Yeah.
The entire audience jumped to their feet and gave him a standing ovation. Mm-hmm. And then just a few months ago, I was at a charity event that Mike Hammer was putting on in Las Vegas. At this go-kart race,
okay.
and it was to raise money for a homeless shelter, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And Rashida was there, and she came up to me and said, Lance, I need a magician to perform at my dad's birthday party next month.
You say, I'll find somebody for you.
And I said, you know, I've been retired so long, I don't know if I could do it, but I have the guy for you. And
oh, really? You didn't do it?
I introduced her to Fielding West,
yeah.
and Fielding was so ecstatic. He talked to her. He said, oh, I'd love to do it. And he drove up to Phoenix mm-hmm. and went to the home. It was at Ollie's home. It was just his family. It was his children and grandchildren.
Mm-hmm.
And Fielding did a magic show for the champ's 74th birthday.
How cool is that?
That was his last birthday party.
Yeah.
What a great supporter of magic.
Right.
Muhammad Ali was.
Whenever I talk with Fielding on the podcast, he always gives such great stories also. He's talked about, Frank Sinatra, you know, having met him backstage
and some other
things, you know. I guess he's come to your show way back when?
When
he was alive?
I don't know that he ever came to my show. I got bumped off a show by Frank Sinatra once.
Okay, what was that?
Well, when I first moved to Las Vegas, they were. I was at the Tropicana Hotel, and they were having a fundraiser over at the Hilton, which is now the Westgate, and it was for the St. Jude's Ranch, which was a children's home orphanage there in Las Vegas, and it was called their Parade of Stars. So it was all different entertainers from around town. And I was, they asked me to perform on it. So I did my first show at the Follies Bergere, and I ran over there in between shows, and I'm getting all my stuff ready to go on. And in walks Frank Sinatra backstage. And Joe Delaney, who is the guy who's organizing the event, comes up to me and says, "Lance, we don't really put Frank Sinatra on the schedule. He just shows up whenever he wants. And we put him on. So he's going to go on.
And bump you.
And so it's going to be another, you know, 30, 40 minutes before we can get you on." I said, "Joe, you know, I have a late show I have to do. I can't hang around." He says, I understand completely. And we thank you for coming here to support the organization. And next year, we'll make sure we get you on." So so I'm packing my stuff up, and I'm kind of bummed because it was here I am in Las Vegas, and this was my first time on a
big stage,
kind of a benefit show that I was asked to do, and it was really exciting. And I packed my stuff up, and I'm looking up, and there's Frank Sinatra standing about 4 feet away from me.
And I
look up, and he's got his back to me. And I'm thinking, wow, there's Frank Sinatra.
The chairman of the board.
It was exciting just to be in the same room with him.
So. Yeah. Wow. Well, he, I was going to say, Fielding also had talked about another tip on practicing, and that was that where he would use, what do you call it, when it goes back and forth, the pentameter, or like for a piano, you know.
So the little...
Yes.
Metronome.
Metronome. Thank you very much. That's the word I was looking for. Because that way, pacing, that you kind of know that you can, you know, as far as taking applause and things like that. Do you have any tips or something that you would give to?
No, I never used a metronome. Lance, well, do you have any Elvis stories?
Oh, that'd be a good one.
Your Sinatra story is incredible. I don't have, I never met Elvis, but I've met a lot of Elvis impersonators. I have. So well, I feel
there was
like,
one here that was a Mexican Elvis impersonator here in San Antonio.
I feel like I knew the king because I have hung out with a lot of Elvis impersonators.
Funny.
What is this? Oh, there's Michael King. You got floor space if I show up at the IBM convention. Michael King. Hi, Michael. Michael King. My first magic convention was the IBM convention in 1976.
You guys shared a room?
And I was sharing a room with Harry Collins.
Yeah.
And Michael King showed up at the convention, and I was 16. He was like 16 also. He didn't have a room. He just showed up to the convention. So I let him, we let him stay in the room with
crash in the room with you.
Yeah, he crashed the room.
Funny.
And over there's Stephanie. One of my assists, and Stephanie, I was talking earlier today to one of the young magicians and was asking about you, and he was saying, what's going on with Stephanie? She was always my favorite assistant.
She's one of your assistants. Now, did you float her? She was one of the, what did
she didn't lead do the assistant, levitation, okay. But she did the gramophone with me.
Yeah.
And a bunch of other tricks, and Tanya, there's Tanya, just joined us. Hi, Tanya. Now, Tanya did the levitation with me. Yes, she did the levitation the last like 2 or 3 months of the show. And both of these girls, terrific dancers, and good to see you guys. And Stephanie did the gramophone. So,
okay. Now, how did you find the different assistants? I know that different people will find them through
Craigslist. We generally held auditions when we needed a new cast member, and
they stay on for a long time, or I guess it kind of depended upon whatever was happening in their lives.
Yeah, most of the cast stayed on for a long time. The cast and the crew.
What was the largest cast you had at some point?
You know, the entire at the Monte Carlo, the entire operation was about 30 people. Now that includes everything. The
lights
assistants,
and everybody.
Onstage people, the technicians, stagehands, sound, lighting. So it was about 30 of us. So it was really a small, when you consider some of the shows, like Cirque du Soleil.
Yeah.
Over at the Bellagio.
How many has they got?
35 people in the wardrobe department.
Alone.
Yeah.
Wow.
So they have more wardrobe people than we had in the entire
But I bet they didn't have a dove wrangler like you. I remember on a show that was Dirty Jobs, and this guy was, he was in charge of cleaning up, and he...
Yeah, Turtle.
Turtle, yes.
Turtle, his job, one of his jobs was shoveling the duck poop out of the duck pen, because they came to us and they said, we want to do a dirty job. What is the filthiest job you have here? And we'd say,
without a question,
shoveling the dirt duck poop is the fifth one. Hello, Fru Fru. How are you? Fru Fru is a wonderful singer, and we worked together in Tombstone Junction.
Yeah, in Louisville.
Back in Cumberland Falls, Kentucky.
Okay.
Many, many years ago. Wow, I'm seeing so many people here. And this is my first live thing on Facebook. So if you're just joining us,
we got like 119 people on there right now. Yeah.
If you're just joining us, we started on Scott's Facebook page,
The Magic Word Podcast.
TheMagicWordPodcast.com. We are here at the International Brotherhood of Magicians Convention.
And if you did miss that, by the way, then too, you can go back then to the Magic Word Podcast .com, and this whole interview or this podcast will be published within the next couple of weeks. In fact, this is a 301st podcast, and I wanted to welcome you to kind of start the next generation of this. I just talked with Gabe Blackstone for the 300th, and so you are my official one to start the next 100.
I saw Argentina and Adair County. I saw something. Let me see. Wait, there's a lot of questions coming in. If I haven't been
diligent and trying. Yeah, well, we've been chatting here.
Here's Scott.
There I am, in case you're wondering who's on the other end of the microphone.
A story's from Dare County, Kentucky. Yes, that is where my family is from, and my sister still lives there, and I have cousins, and that's where I'm moving back to eventually, to the farm. I love it, Dare County. And, I was inspired by you, Lance. Wow, thank you. And...
I hope, by the way, as you're kind of looking through this, for those people who are listening to this in the podcast and driving to and from work and hearing this much after this is gone.
Mickey Mudd says, where's the lighter fluid? Oh. Mickey, I don't know how long you've been on this podcast, but I told the story of when we found that street sign next to your house. The police called Mickey. They're looking for you, too.
Your name is Mudd.
Yeah. When are you coming to Mexico? Hola, amigo.
You don't travel, so probably not for a while.
I don't get out too much anymore.
Yep. You can tell by your beard.
When are you bringing the act out of retirement? Well, I'd have to shave if I did that, so we can't. When are you coming to South Africa, Land? Oh, there's Craig Mitchell who runs the College of Magic.
Yep.
In South Africa. I would actually really enjoy, love to come there and meet the
That's students. A great thing that Craig does with those guys.
And tell the two guys, Sewepe and... Mukambiso.
He knows who you mean.
I always butcher his name.
Those two guys were on, wasn't it on the...
On Make Believe.
Make Believe, yes.
Make Believe. Mm-hmm. They were the two,
you can go back to the movie and watch those
from South Africa.
Who were students there at the college.
They were
college
on the documentary Make Believe.
Right.
Which is a terrific documentary. Do you still perform your dove act to this? No, I don't do it, but I did do part of the act in the film, Billy Toppit, Master Magician.
At a birthday party?
And at the birthday party. Yeah. And there was a party scene where I did some more of it. And thank you. Wow, look at all these nice comments.
How nice.
You are, Lance, you are an icon. And this is incredible. You know what that means, icon? That means old guy.
Old guys. Yeah, yeah. You don't reach that icon status like overnight.
There's my cousin Marilyn from Boston. Hi, Marilyn. How are you? Look at this. I think half these people are my family.
That's
right. Friends. Corbin, Kentucky. Here's somebody from Corbin, Kentucky. Now, Corbin was the city that was the biggest city closest to Tombstone Junction.
Okay.
Where Mac and I were.
So you go over to sleep, spend the night there, and then go back to work the next day.
Corbin, Kentucky, that's where the very first Kentucky Fried Chicken restaurant.
The Colonel's
place. Yeah, the Colonel's restaurant.
Huh.
Chicago, wonderful. Gabriel, there's my wardrobe mistress.
Okay.
Gabriel. And she says, wish we were there. I just saw her Thursday night. She works for Chris Angel now.
Okay.
And I just saw her Thursday night. I went to the opening of Chris's new show, Mind Freak Live, at the, here it is. Mukambiso and Sewepe, yes.
Thanks,
Craig. Please tell them I said hello. The IBM Beard Convention.
Yeah, that's right. And Eugene Berger is here, too, by the way, speaking of the beard.
Yeah, we should have
magic beard.
Jim Holmes, look at that. There's James Holmes.
Oh, I know him, sure.
Expert magician with the Fantasio candles and canes. Did you ever see James's one-handed vanishing cane?
You know, I'll tell you a funny story about him is that I did see him showing it to Di Vernon. We were...
Oh, really?
Yep, and he stopped. We were in a hallway, and I want to say it was a convention. And,
Cousin Rhonda.
And that James had said, you know, Di, I'd like to show you this, and he did it. And I liked it. That was pretty cool.
That was amazing. Yeah. I got more cousin Rhonda is here. Tell Aunt Zella I said hello. And I keep every day I keep thinking I have to call Aunt Zella. I haven't talked to her in forever. And then by the time I remember it, it's like, oh, it's too, you know.
You're retired, man. You got time.
It's 2 hours later there than in Las Vegas. And I've got to call my aunt. It's my only aunt left. Yeah. Aunt Zella. And
yep, you
but
need
please
to
tell
do
her
that.
I said hi. Well, look at all these comments. Boy, I can't keep up with. Oh, Mike Hammer, there he is. Mike Hammer, I was telling the story earlier about being with your at your go kart
that charity
event.
Thing.
Mm-hmm. And there's Mondre, and he's in the movie also. He's in the party scene.
How long is the movie? An hour and a half? 2 hours?
The movie. I'm going to put this down here because this is probably getting boring. Me just reading. Things.
Only the people who are listening to the podcast.
The movie is about an hour and 45 minutes mm-hmm. long, and I think it's an hour and 50 with the credits.
Okay.
So it's a feature-length film, mm-hmm. and I'm very excited for everybody to see it. And
when do you think it's going to be released? Shortly,
as soon as I possibly can.
Yeah, the sooner the better.
But the problem is you don't want to blow your sales by rushing it.
Oh, I hadn't thought of that.
You want to squeeze. There's a certain order that you do it in.
Otherwise, it goes straight to DVD.
If you can get theatrical releases, mm-hmm. which I think we can get in a limited, at least in a limited area, mm-hmm. if you can get there, you do that first.
Okay, you're learning a lot about this, aren't you?
Yeah, it's a whole art form. So you try to do that first, I think, and then you can go to digital downloads. And then you can go to DVD. Then mm-hmm. you can get it on premium cable channels, and then mm-hmm. standard cable. Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So there's a whole order that you need to go in, or else if you try to rush it, I could release it tomorrow if I wanted to. I could just go bing, let's put it on iTunes or Facebook mm-hmm. or Amazon or whatever. Bang, I could press a button, but now I kill my other sales.
Of course. Yeah.
So you want to do it in a way that makes sense for the movie.
Right, right. Well, I'll tell you what. We've probably gone on over here long enough. So I want to tell you what I want to do. Because the name of the podcast is called The Magic Word, and this is your first time, Lance, and actually being my full-time guest on one of these things. So I wanted just to ask you, what is your magic word? It doesn't have to be like a word. It could be a phrase, or what's your philosophy of
please
life?
Please and thank you.
Please.
Are the magic words.
Please and thank
please,
you.
Please. You'd be surprised.
Yeah, that's true. The people don't use those.
Yeah. You'd be surprised how much that will accomplish. Oh, getting thumbs up there. I see. People can do thumbs up and it pops up on the screen.
Yeah, it kind of runs across
the
screen.
Ann Rohinsky. Hi, Ann. Now, Ann.
Is she a relative too?
She's not a relative. I feel like she is. Ann
see,
was,
there it goes across the screen.
Ann was for many years the publicist for NBC.
Oh, okay.
And so she was in charge when I was doing TV specials and when we were doing World's Greatest Magic. Yeah. She was in charge of getting the word out that there's a magic show coming on TV, setting up interviews and setting up all kinds of things to publicize the television
shows. One last thing, and then also speaking of the television show, are you anxious to do another one of those roller coaster escapes?
No, I'm not doing any more escapes. I'm not
real quick, can you tell that story?
I'm not shaving anymore.
Can you tell that story real quick,
the
just
story,
about the
well,
roller coaster?
Well, yeah, I did several escapes back in the 90s on television specials. Upside down straitjacket
coffin.
Escape, buried alive mm-hmm. in the coffin, the underwater escape, straitjacket in a water tank, car crusher escape.
Yep.
And the last one was the roller coaster. Now, this was not my idea. This was Johnny Thompson's idea. Mm-hmm. Every year when I did a TV special, Johnny would come to me and say, why don't you do my roller coaster escape?
Yeah.
Because this was something Johnny had done in Japan. He didn't do it.
Yeah.
He suggested
someone else
He didn't
do it.
Get strapped to the roller coaster. there was a female escape artist, Lauren Condon, and they did a Japanese television special. She went over there and they filmed. Her father was Joe Condon, was a very good friend of mine. Mm-hmm. And they did all these escapes. And one of them was Johnny came up with this thing. They had a roller coaster. It was all shot. A lot of it was shot in a theme park there in Japan.
Yeah.
So they did. She was strapped on a thing with a roller coaster. And she had to get out for the roller coaster.
Hit her, right.
And so they went and filmed this. And then Johnny showed me the tape. And I was like, that's too dangerous. That looks crazy, mm-hmm. John. And he kept saying, you know, no, you need to do my roller. No. And then finally, I just ran out of material. I said, okay,
let's do it.
Let's do it. And that was the big thing. So we shot it, and I jumped away, and the roller coaster came through, and then they showed me the playback.
Mm-hmm.
We shot it from there was like three or four or five cameras on me. So if you look at the tape. They show it from one angle, then they show it from another angle, mm-hmm. and there's one angle we didn't use because it was kind of the reverse shot. You couldn't see anything because the coaster blocked it.
Okay.
But they showed like three different angles on the TV show, but they showed me a playback, and I was like, oh no, we can't show this on TV. Mm-hmm. And they go, why not? He says, this is too scary. This is going to scare children.
Yeah.
And I thought for a while we weren't going to have we didn't have an ending for the special, mm-hmm. but they...
But when you jumped away, I mean, didn't it just clip your heel as you were jumping away?
It was very close. And before we shot it, Gary Willett, who was the producer on the show, came up to me and said, at the end of this trick, assuming you're alive, wow. What are you going to do?
Uh-huh.
He says, it doesn't seem to me like it's one of those things where it's, yay, high five with the crew, which, mm-hmm. you know, we'd done on other escapes. And he said, what are you going to do at the end of this escape? And I said, I don't know. I don't know what I'm going to do. Let's just film it.
Yeah.
Just keep the cameras rolling. So we did the trick, and then I set up, and I looked, and I just said, that was stupid.
Yeah, I remember that so
that
well.
That was just what came out of my mouth.
And organically.
I mean, organically.
That's what you felt.
And then after the show, Gary's like, that was great, Lance. What a great ending. It was stupid.
Yeah. Well, listen, we're going to end on that then also. This wasn't stupid, and I had to ask you if you'd do this. I asked please, and I'm going to use your word thank you for being
my
guest.
You're very, very welcome. Pleasure, Scott. Always good to talk to you.
Thank you, Lance.
And thanks, everybody, for tuning in.
Be sure to go to themagicwordpodcast.com so that way you can know where to go.
Yeah, that's the whole thing will be there.
Yep.
And thanks, and I guess it worked because...
We're still alive.
I'm being dragged into the 21st century, and I have an iPhone.
There we go.
And we know how to work it.
We're right
thanks,
over
everybody.
There. Thank you.
Thank you. Take care.
Until next time. Well, that was Lance Burton, and this is Scotty out.
Yay!
Well, was that some fun or what? Thanks, Lance, very much for being on the Magic Word Podcast and for giving us some background and some pretty cool stories, and also for all the people who are on Facebook streaming live who are asking questions. And thanks, Lance, for answering them back and being a part of this little experiment, which seems to have worked out quite fine. And although this is titled sequentially as number 305, I really like to consider this my 301st podcast. I know that might seem to be kind of confusing, but I kind of feel like this is the beginning of the next 100. And this was kind of a commitment that I have to try to have even better and a higher quality performers and magicians and conversations so that you guys will get more for your money. And speaking of money, this is free for you. And if you want to contribute and be a friend of the Magic Word, I have to always make that appeal. Just go to themagicwordpodcast.com and you can donate anything that you wish financially. If you want to donate $1, $5, $10, $20, $50, $100, either a one-time donation or on a ongoing monthly pledge, all will be appreciated, which goes to help defray many of our production costs that go into putting this podcast on the air week after week. Well, next week we will be traveling to Colon, Michigan, where we will go to the Abbott's get-together, and I will be posting daily updates from the convention so this way that you can feel that you are actually there even if you can't be. I know that's going to be another fun convention packed with a lot of great people. It is one of the more unique conventions. Hey, look, we're out of time. I'm going to have to run, and I will see you next week in Colon, Michigan. So for now, stay well, get booked, and remember to say please and thank you. This is Scotty out.